And I took my son, who's three, so it was a little bit more of a child management experience than watching a baseball game. But even he knew the sound was different when Moncada hit a dinger. About, I think it was the fourth inning. He hit an absolute laser.
And welcome to episode 128 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined by my usual co-host, Mike Gianella, of the BP Fantasy Team. Mike, Yoenis Cespedes has three home runs tonight. Life is good.
Yeah, life is really good. Life is also really good if you're Daniel Murphy, who's like hitting .467 on the season now.
Oh, we can't all be him, but you have Asdrubal Cabrera, so that's not too bad. He's really good.
Yeah, I don't know if you're talking about my fantasy team or my Mets, but I have both are true.
Well, I'm playing Cespedes in a head-to-head this week, so I'm feeling the opposite of whatever emotions you have going on. And here to join us today, we have a special guest filling in for Brett Sayer, who is on vacation. He is the author of The Stash List. We've been writing together, it feels like, for years now. He's a writer at Baseball Prospectus, Greg Wellemeyer. Greg, how's it going tonight?
Doing pretty well, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Today we're going to talk expert fab. We're going to touch on some current events. We're also going to hit on some listener questions. So a lot to get to. But before we do, let's cover a little bit of housekeeping here. You can subscribe to Baseball Prospectus. It's where you can read all of our columns. Greg's Stash List comes out on Thursdays, right, Greg?
Yeah, that's right, Thursday.
Explain what the Stash List is in case people are unfamiliar with it.
Yeah, sure. So it is minor leaguers, major leaguers on the DL who are underowned, and guys in roles that may be changing, be it relievers that are going to come into some saves or part-timers who may get a full-time role, who you might want to spend a bench spot or two on as a stash here in anticipation of them hopefully coming up or gaining at-bats or innings.
So that was the formal description of it. Let me just say you undersold it. It's the best column we have at BP. I love it. It's great if you're just looking for guys who could potentially jump into a role. It's the best. So
yeah, I really, you know, Brett Sayer started doing this, and I still use it. It's really an essential piece, and it's really, honestly, I've picked people up in tout because of the stash list, and like it's really helped me. So yeah, it's a good column. You should read it.
Yeah,
so, I mean, if you can pick up people, you know, in your league in particular who are in the minors, and you know, you're not limited.
It was really eye-opening last week, the response from the readers. It kind of, I know that Brett wrote it in the past and those are big shoes to fill, but I was shocked and thankful at how many people read and said, you know, what about this guy, what about that guy. It was fun to interact in the comments.
Yep, so the only way to get the Stash List is to subscribe to Baseball Prospectus. You can do that with a one-year premium membership. If you do the Super Premium membership, you get access to the Bat Signal, where you can harass Craig Goldstein at all hours of the day. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. I am at George Bissell. That's with two S's and two L's. Mike is at Mike Gianella, and Greg is at Greg Wellemeyer. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. We haven't had any new reviews in a couple of weeks here, so you guys are slacking out there. If you haven't done that yet, what are you waiting for? This is the best fantasy podcast out there, and that's not hyperbole. I firmly believe that. All right, let's move on to the main event here. We have expert fab, and before we do that, I want to touch on two key injuries that happened, I guess you could say, over the weekend. Gary Sanchez going on the disabled list with a right bicep strain, and then Buster Posey hitting the DL as well for the Giants just today as we record this. So I'll start with you, Mike, and this is something we talked about throughout the off season, but catchers are just inherently risky, and maybe Posey's bucked the trend because other than the ACL tear where he got in the collision at the plate, he's been relatively healthy throughout his career, but this is always lurking with catchers. It's just the nature of the position that these guys can get beat up.
Yeah, and, you know, Sal Perez is the other guy who comes to mind who, for the most part, you know, he had a couple injuries but has played a lot of games. But there's that other factor, too, which is even when guys play, and you've seen this less with Posey and more with Perez, the fatigue tends to lead to a fall off in stats, particularly in the second half. You know, and it's why, and unless a catcher is being rotated, you know, through a DH, you don't want to go too high on a catcher, and why there was some concern, you know, this will probably segue into later into the show. You know, Gary Sanchez was somebody who, you know, we were all kind of like, well, not all, but some people really high on. And there was always that injury risk. What's weird about Sanchez, of course, is he didn't get hurt behind the plate, you know. And same's true for Posey. Like, they both didn't get hurt behind the plate. They both got hurt hitting.
So I want to ask you, Greg, what are you doing with a guy like Sanchez? Obviously, you're keeping him on your DL spot, but does this change your expectations going forward in a redraft league over the rest of the season? Obviously, in a dynasty, you're not considering moving him, I don't think. But if I'm in a redraft, I'm not sure I'm confident he comes back in 4 weeks and hits for power right away, which is a problem. How are you viewing this injury in the terms of his production over the rest of the season?
Yeah, I tend to agree that I'm not sure he can do what was expected. But on the other hand, if you move him now, you're going to be selling low. I don't think he can return full value. And so if I'm sitting on Sanchez in a redraft, I'm probably just going to hold him and wait and just cross my fingers and hope he becomes the guy that we thought he was going to be. I've got him in a dynasty, and that's a bummer. I had to replace him with James McCann, which is not a fun drop off. And I imagine redraft owners are in the same spot. But yeah, I'd sit on him and just cross fingers. Otherwise, you're going to have to sell low.
Now, James McCann did homer today, so that's not the worst thing. But it was off Hector Santiago, so take it with a grain of salt there. I do want to address one quick thing about Sanchez and to a lesser degree Trey Turner, because I saw some sentiment on Twitter from several industry people. I won't single them out because that's pointless, but you do see this a lot, that there's a lot of confirmation bias that goes on, that, oh, I knew Sanchez was going to be a bust. And it's like, well, just because he got hurt, that doesn't validate that opinion. He could have gotten hurt in spring training. I mean, I don't buy that at all. Do you guys agree with that notion that,
yeah,
it seems nuts to me?
I saw that with Turner. You know, you say you saw it with Sanchez. I saw somebody doing that
with
Turner.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is kind of like, you know, and quite honestly, even if, you know, unless somebody's going really badly, like Jose Reyes kind of comes to mind, and you can see, you know, not just in the numbers, but in the performance where it looks like something might be wrong, it's really difficult to look at a week or 9 days worth of stats and say, okay, yeah, this proves my point. Like the Mets, for example, tonight, you know, I was looking at Fangraphs live, you know, like stat feed. They went from last in batting average to, like, as a team, to 21st in one night. You know, that was the last I looked at. It might have dropped a little bit in the last inning. Things just changed so much. Like, it's really impossible to look at a week and say it proves your point. You know, again, from a scouting perspective, it's possible you might see something that changes, but, you know, if you're just looking at numbers, I don't think that's valid for the most part. And yeah, when you throw injuries into it, it's kind of silly. Like, I wasn't high on Trey Turner coming into the year compared to some other people, but it's way too soon to call him a bust. And, you know, he's going to miss, what, like a week or, you know, a week and a half? That's just not much time.
No, it's not performance related either. Like, that's the part right. That bugs me. If you wanted to knock either of those guys coming into the year saying, I don't think what they did last year is remotely close to repeatable on a performance level, that makes sense. But to ding them because they got hurt, I just think that's bad process. Greg, are you on board with that as well?
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't really have anything to add to Mike. I think that was right on. And with Sanchez and Turner specifically, I don't think they're going to do what they did in the second halves last year. But both guys have shown ability to return a huge pile of value in a short amount of time. So let's pump the brakes on calling them a bust.
Yeah, good point. Pump the brakes too on giving up on guys. I mean, unless it was like someone you drafted in the last round, I'm not cutting bait with really anybody. at this point. Even like Francisco Liriano, like I'm not totally giving up yet because who knows what he's going to look like tomorrow night. So just stay calm here. It's very early. All right. So let's dive into the expert fab. We're going to start on the labor mix side because there's a very interesting name at the top. He went for $23. His name is Mark Reynolds. We actually had a piece up on BP that went up on Monday from our colleague Eric Roseberry about Reynolds in the buyer's guide. So I'll start with you, Greg. What do you think about Mark Reynolds in general? Because it feels like he's been around forever, and I really do not like to buy in on players that we have like 10 years of a track record on at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what to make of it. I mean, it's Coors, right? That's most of it. I think he had hit 280 last year or somewhere in that neighborhood, an easy career high. And I think Mike mentioned in the article, it's kind of hard to see where the plate appearances are going to come from right now, but he got 400 or more last year. And he's tearing it up right now. There's no doubt about that. I don't know that he can continue to do that. I think he sacrificed a little bit of power for hit last year, and I'm not sure based on the decade of track record we have that he could do that again either. But I mean, I get the investment, for the short term, and with hopes that it can continue and he can find plate appearances going forward.
Mike, Mark Reynolds, what? I don't want to own Reynolds.
The free agent pool's kind of thin, and there is the Colorado attraction with him. I have Reynolds in tout NL, and in an NL league as your last corner, he's actually an asset. It's difficult to see in a mixed league, unless Colorado, either has interleague games or there's another injury. I feel like you're buying like maybe a month's worth of stats here. And if he cools off, which we know he will, if he hits like, a home run like every 10 days, and drives in some runs, he's in that lineup, that's okay. Yeah, but that's my problem, is that David Dahl comes back and, Ian Desmond comes back. And as much as I might like Reynolds in that park as a fly ball hitter, I just don't see where he plays. So, it's a case also, we talk about this on the show a lot. In a league like Tout, so in Tout draft, he went for 59. In a league where you have $0 bids, I might not mind going, 150 on the $1,000 budget. Mm. It just doesn't really make sense to me in labor. We've seen this. We've seen teams, because of that $1 minimum, run out of money really fast.
Yeah, for what it's worth, Reynolds, I mean, stats are stats. He is hitting .345 so far through the first 8 games. So if you have a need at a corner, yeah, sure. But I'd temper my expectations if I were in a mixed league. I wouldn't count on him giving you anything past May, would be my point.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing about that, too, is the stats are stats. But yeah, I often find this phenomenon, too. I call it chasing the past. People bid aggressively on what just happened. And it's like, well, you realize you're not retroactively buying stats, you're buying everything he does forward, which is why I said that expectation of, a home run every week and a half might be realistic while he's playing. Yeah. And that's probably what you're going to get. And will we have another hot week? Maybe. I just wouldn't bet on it.
So speaking of what just happened, Greg, what the hell happened here with Kendall Graveman? Because we've had some discussion about him internally, and you know what? If he's gonna throw 90% two seamers and sinkers, basically. Well, it's a two seamer, right? Or am I misinterpreting what his repertoire is? It's a two seamer, right?
Yeah, I mean, PitchFX calls it a sinker, but I'm not really sure which to call it, to be honest. Right. I think it's a sinker.
Yeah.
I can't explain the strikeouts, that's for sure. I mean, I know there's a little bit of what seems like a velocity bump, and we can get into the differences in the way they're recording velocity early this season, so it's a little hard to tell if it actually is a velocity bump, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to imagine continued success with literally one pitch. I mean, he's thrown 88% sinkers so far this year, which is crazy.
Mike, what do you think about Graveman? Because we've kind of touched on him a little bit. I think we touched on him on the last show on the AL side after his first start. And there's just a limited ceiling here because of the strikeout upside. But at some point, you have to start to believe a little bit in him when he starts doing this more.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, and that's what it comes down to. So he's, you know, again, small sample size, but he's striking out about 8 batters per 9. You know, if he can do that, then he's got some viability in a mixed league or a deeper mixed league. You know, the problem I have is, you know, you're right. Like, what I'm seeing is that increased reliance on the sinker. You know, and there was an interesting piece up at Fangraphs that Jeff Zimmerman wrote. You know, he was kind of talking about how for a pitcher like Graveman, you know, the velocity's up, you know, even when you take into account how the readings right now have been a little misleading. But sometimes for a guy like Graveman, that increased velocity is bad because you're putting more torque on the sink. And, you know, it's just leading to the pitch doing things you don't expect it to do. So, you know, while we always think of velocity as being, you know, automatically a good thing, I think there's a limit for Graveman to what it can do, particularly once the hitters start to make contact. Because you're talking about perhaps a better fastball. You're not talking about a blazing fastball. So, yeah, there's some room for growth with Graveman. I could see him being a back-end mix guy. And, you know, this bid, he went for 12 in labor mix. I think this bid's okay. You just don't want to get too, you know, crazy, excited, exuberant about what Kendall Graveman's going to do for your fantasy team.
Yeah, I think Twerk on the Sink is going to be my new fantasy team name, by the way.
That'd be a good name.
Twerk on the Sink. But no, seriously, Graveman, I mean, he took this page straight out of the Shoemaker and Rich Hill playbook, right, Greg? I mean, this is basically what those guys were doing in terms of pitch selection a year ago, where they had these crazy stretches that they've gone on. But I don't think it's that sustainable, right, basically?
Yeah, I agree, and it is like that. But I think even in that stretch when Shoemaker was throwing a crazy amount of splitters, it was like, I don't remember the numbers, but I think it was like 50 or 60%, and Graveman's up at 90 with the sinker. So, yeah, I don't see. I mean, I noticed in BP's new tunneling data this offseason that he rates pretty well on some of those metrics, and a lot of that is just because he throws – you know, one sinker after the next. So, of course, the tunnel is going to be the same when you throw the same pitch. But, so I think there's some room for continued like decent performance if he gets back and to throwing those other pitches. But I don't expect the strikeouts to stick around.
Yeah, between him and Jarrell Cotton, it's definitely like a fascinating rotation to watch on a nightly basis. But it's just like a science experiment. I don't quite want to know how it's going to end yet. Speaking of endings in Oakland, Santiago Casilla, Mike, he went for $19. Help me sort out this closer situation. I know Brett Sayre has publicly announced his affection for or affinity for Santiago Casilla, but this situation's kind of a mess right now, right? If they're going to continue to go by committee.
Well, you know, I don't know if it's a mess for Oakland, and I like what they're doing, and I've never been an advocate of, like, you know, that you have to have a closer in the ninth, but yeah, for fantasy, it is a mess. So, you know, basically, it looked like, you know, Santiago Casilla was going to be the closer. He got a save last week, and then yesterday, I think it was against the Royals, you know, Casilla comes in the eighth, Sean Doolittle comes in the ninth, and, you know, he basically happens because the Royals had two of their tough lefties in Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas coming up. So it's a logical move. You know, if you think about it, it's more likely that you're going to get more saves from the guy, you know, facing the righties and the lefties. But yeah, what that means is that if, you know, even if they both hold on to the jobs and, you know, things are not fluid with the relievers behind them, you're looking at 20 to 25 saves for Casilla in all likelihood, as opposed to, like, you know, 35 to 40. So that's something to consider. You still want to invest in Casilla, you know, unless you're in a 10-team mix or what some people call a standard mix. But yeah, otherwise, he's worth having. You just have to kind of keep that in mind. And if you're in a tight saves race, you're going to need to find like 10 or 15 saves elsewhere.
I do not like closers. Greg.
I don't either.
They're just such a pain. Joaquin Benoit, he went for $5. You know, you could see this one coming like a mile away, right? Like, you knew it was not going to be Hector Neris, like, just because the Phillies weren't going to do it, right? I mean, this just felt inevitable. In a way.
Yeah, a lot of people make the argument that they don't want to install him as the closer because they want to keep his ARP costs down, and I don't know necessarily that I buy that, although maybe they do. I can't really figure out another reason why. I mean, Benoit's got a long track record, but I can't imagine him sticking the whole year.
Yeah, Mike Benoit, how many weeks does he hold the job for? Over under 4.
I think it's over. See, the funny thing about Benoit is that he's I with all due respect, Greg, I agree. I don't see him holding the job all year, but I could see him holding it for a while. Here's my thinking about Neres. I do agree with you, Greg, that the I don't think it's an arb issue. What I think it is that the Phillies really like having him as a multi-inning reliever and someone with flexibility. He is the best reliever in the pen right now. And Benoit isn't, and he's more of a one-inning guy. So why, put your potential two-inning guy or multi-inning guy on the ninth and lock him in there? Why not go with the veteran? And the other thing is, we know the Phillies are not going anywhere this year. I could easily see Benoit holding the job until June or July. And the other part of this to consider is that the Phillies can get anything for him at the deadline. That's going to be a win for them. So some of the motivation with Gomez was that same motivation to try to, get some blood from a stone in a trade. In Benoit's case, I think this is, not a stone, and you could actually get something from him if he holds a job. So there's something to that. I think he'll be okay. I don't want to oversell Joaquin Benoit. We're not talking about an elite closer. We're probably talking about a bottom third guy, but a bottom third guy who could hold the job, and I could see him getting, I'd say, 15 saves.
He's 39 years old and he injured himself running in from the bullpen in Toronto after a bench clearing incident last year.
If Fernando Rodney can, if Fernando Rodney can close at his age, so can Benoit.
It does remind me a lot of the was it Chris Perez who closed in Cleveland for a while, and it was always like, why is Chris Perez closing when they have Cody Allen? But it reminds me a little bit of that with Neres, but he's going to get the job at some point. You're right
Yeah,
there. It might
I
be a
just think
while.
at some point it's going to be either later this year or even in 2018. The Phillies just don't have much of an incentive. I could always tell, like, being here, like, sometimes there's that advantage when you live somewhere. I could tell being here, the vibe I've always had is that they want to push that off as long as possible.
Same goes for Joe Jimenez, who was called up this week. Like, I love him long term, but he has almost no shot. Like, unless Fernando Rodriguez. Yeah, Frankie Rodriguez, right? Jesus.
Francisco.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Just K-Rod.
K-Rod.
K-Rod, yeah.
Yeah,
K-Rod.
I always mess up his first name. Apologies, K-Rod. Unless he gets hurt, like, I can't see. Jimenez, though, exciting, right, Greg? We've been following him a lot in the minor leagues the last couple of years. He's pretty good.
Yeah, for sure. I love him, and I'm glad to see that maybe once and for all the Tigers are done with Rondon.
I hope so. Mike, anybody else that you want to highlight here on the mixed side? Because there are some interesting names on the only sides of things. So,
Yeah,
anyone else
I
that
don't
we're talking?
really, I don't see anybody. I mean, a lot of these guys are like lower end. Whoever stuck by the way, the Facts of Life credit song into my article, I love them. I did not actually do that. Yeah, there's a few names here. You mentioned Benoit. Willie Peralta. What's your take on him? I know that he's such a tease. Like, he's one of those guys that he'll have a good outing and velocity's there and people get excited. I've never been a believer. Have you guys ever believed in Willie Peralta or no?
No.
No, although I will say I was mildly intrigued in deeper leagues because he had a really good second half under the radar last year. I think he had a sub-3 ERA in the
He
second
did.
half. So I took a shot at him in a couple deeper leagues. I don't believe, though. I mean, it's just the velocity and the sinking fastball that gets people excited and
Yeah.
but he is who he is. I think he looked like himself today, which is to say he had that working, but he also walked a handful of guys and gave up a
Yep.
few runs.
And then
So
his BABIP over the last 2 years, 336 in 2016, 320 in 2015. That's crazy. Just looking at his numbers. Yeah, I've never been much of a Peralta fan. There's just a lot of hard contact, and in that ballpark, there is no margin for error. Like, he is the risk of some major implosions, and that's what can hurt you in fantasy.
Did my other question here is, so after another decent outing today, do we believe, not that he's all the way back, but do we believe that James Shields is, like, capable as a streamer in a deep mix league?
This is the Brett thing, isn't it?
It's a lot of it's a lot of caveats there, by the way.
Brett had this theory in the offseason after Tout. He was like, well, veteran pitchers are solid rebound candidates after they've had a terrible year. Like, Shields did get some swings and misses today. Like, I saw a lot of his outing, but Francisco Lindor tattooed a ball on him. Even the some of the outs were pretty loud, so...
Yeah, see, I didn't see the game. I was, like, in the car, like, you know, on the way home, and so, yeah, I didn't see it.
He got bailed out. I mean, when he left the game, the bases were loaded with one out, and then Encarnacion grounded into a double play. So that line definitely looks better than maybe yeah. It should have. But, Greg, I mean, what do you think of Shields? I thought it was okay today. Like, fine.
I didn't see any of today, but yeah. I will pass on James Shields.
That's fair. I don't blame you.
Too many home runs for me.
That's totally fair. Mike, anything else here? Amir Garrett. We talked about him last week on the show, but we didn't have Greg on. So, Greg, Amir Garrett, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much are you interested?
Oh, for redraft, probably 6. Yeah, so, I mean... I'm interested to see what he has. You hear a lot of Garrett to the bullpen eventually talk, but I think the Reds are not in a position to do that anytime soon, certainly. So I think, he pitched well in his first outing, and they'll keep running him out there as long as he doesn't get shelled, as long as he doesn't do what Cody Reed did last year.
Yeah, Cody Reed reliever looks really good, though, by the way. That his arsenal works in short stints like that.
That's a problem with the Reds in general, though. It feels like almost every pitcher of theirs is better suited for the bullpen. And you know, Greg's right. At some point, you know, you need starters. You can't just have an entire, you know, team of relievers.
I was just gonna say I thought Finnegan was a reliever for sure, but he finished strong last year and looked lights out in his first 2017 outing. Also,
yeah, he could be all right.
I think he walked like 5 guys last night, though. So, yeah. Ups and downs. Adam Frazier got picked up for a buck. I don't know what to make of him. I own him in TDGX, though. I have for a while. He's weird, but interesting. I don't think he's mixed league relevant, though, but he got picked up in mixed.
Yeah, so. I was a little surprised by that pickup. I would agree.
I wrote about him for the free agent watch as a NL only guy, so. I'd pick him up there, but all right, let's move on to the NL side. And Mike, we'll start with Kyle Freeland because he's the guy I found myself picking up in a ton of leagues. I didn't think he was this good. I watched him and the stuff was good, and he held the Dodgers, who I know they're terrible against left-handed pitching, at least like last year they were, but he held them to one run in Coors in his debut. That was impressive.
I saw most of that start, and I was impressed. And you know, I know this kind of sounds like a little cliche and you know anti-analytic, but I was impressed by his poise. Like he really just didn't look like a guy making his major league debut, you know, against a team that you know went to the playoffs last year, was one of the best teams in baseball. And yeah, I know they have trouble against lefties, but I just didn't expect this. Like I expected. A good outing for Freeland was going to be like, you know, 3 or 4 runs, like, you know, 5 2/3, 6 innings. He keeps a team in the game. And instead it was a lot better than that. And, you know, I think what I was impressed most with was the slider. Like I had heard some good things about that pitch, by the way. And I mentioned this in the article, some of the FX, tools out there that they identified as a cutter. But it is actually a slider, just you know, in case you're wondering or if you're thinking, oh, you know, Mike doesn't know what he's talking about, which is sometimes true. But in this case, I do. But yeah, getting back to Freeland, I was impressed. You know, it'll be interesting to see with him and Senzatella and some of these other starters, like what they're going to do. The Rockies have actually, you know, put some talent out there, and I think some of these guys, you know, they're not going to light up the world because of Coors, but I could see them being like low-end double-digit earners even in a mixed league.
Yeah, I made this point on Twitter that I'm not sure I would trust Freeland in Coors against a really good offense, but he gets the Padres tomorrow. Like, when this podcast goes up, Freeland starts against the Padres. You'll probably be listening to this while you're watching it. Greg, would you use Freeland in some of these upcoming matchups? Because it looks like he's going to get the Padres and then maybe the Giants this weekend or... Monday?
I would use him, sure, if the San Francisco game's in San Francisco, I would I would use him there too. And I don't really have much to add to Freeland beyond what Mike said, but I think I want to mention something he said in his piece, which is that the Rockies staff in general is a little bit more appealing this year than it's been in quite some time. I'm pretty high on Gray. Obviously, he's going to strike out a lot of guys, and he struggled his first couple outings in terms of his ratios. But I think he's got a high ceiling. I like Anderson a bit. Chatwood was good on the road last year. And then you've got Freeland and Senzatella. And I think Senzatella's not as good as he looked in his first outing. I saw him when he was in low A in Asheville. And since Mike did a non-analytical thing, I'll say that I really love the way that he competed when I saw him in Asheville. He was just always kind of a bulldog out there. There's more intrigue in the Rockies rotation than there's been in quite some time.
You actually made a really great point about the playing time. Like, barring an injury, Kyle Freeland's making 25 to 30 starts this year, probably, right? Like, I can't see a scenario in which he doesn't get to, like, 150, 160 innings, right? Like, they're going to pitch him every 5 days.
I would think so. I mean, it's kind of wild how little upper-level experience he and Senzatella had before they brought him up, but I don't think they'd bring him up, you know, on opening day without intention of keeping him in the rotation, barring, you know, major failure.
Yeah, I mean, he threw, like, 150 innings in the minors last year, so, I mean, he could get a full season, which is, I think, really appealing. Like, they don't have anyone else. Like, they're not going to send him down unless he's just terrible, which I don't foresee happening. Mike, is that enough on Freeland? I think we've
covered Freeland sufficiently. Yeah, I you know, unless things really go south for him, he'll throw 100, you know, 50 innings easy.
Yeah, the strikeout rates in the minors are not that encouraging, but I don't know. You got to take shots on guys, and I don't mind doing this in a deeper mixed or an NL only. He actually went for 76. This is a $100 budget.
No,
right?
This is a tout's a thousand. Ah. So that's kind of like the equivalent of an $8 bid in labor. And labor, it's funny, in labor on L is the only one for two, which I think is a bargain.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll start with you, Greg, here. Who's a name on the NL side that you would be interested in an NL only that got picked up?
Nick Franklin. I saw him in Durham a bunch last year. He's a versatile switch hitter, bunch of positions. There's not really a spot for him necessarily in Milwaukee, and they already have, you know, a bunch of versatility on that 25-man roster. But if he could find his way into at-bats somehow, I think he'll be decent. Little power, little speed, not going to kill you anywhere, really. I don't know about short, like, near-term value. I don't know how long I'd stash him for, but I think he can play a little.
Mike, anybody else worth talking about here on this side? Did you pick up anybody here?
Nope, I stood pat. I cycled Brandon McCarthy in with that, like, low starter strategy I'm doing. I considered Stephen Drew, who went for 67, but I wouldn't have bid that high. I probably would have bid, like, you know, 5 to 10. So I wouldn't have got him. And now, you know, it's funny, with Trey Turner out, it looked like Drew's getting a lot of at-bats, but now I believe that Drew is battling a minor injury of his own. I just saw that right before we hopped on, so I don't have a lot of information about it. But, you know, at the time, that looked like a pretty, you know, pretty slick pickup, because, you know, you figure Turner's going to miss a few days, and you get some starts from Drew, who, you know, we all kind of malign him, but when he plays, he seems to hit for power.
Well, you know what they say about having a good plan. it happens sometimes. Senzatella went for $1. That could be a nice dollar spent. Nobody else here, right, guys? I don't. Ugh.
Not really. No. You know what? Juan Lagares, when he comes back from his rehab assignment, will play against some lefties. But even in an NL, he's kind of a stretch.
All right. On the AL side, Jesse Hahn was the big bid for $6. I personally don't have any interest there. Anybody here you guys want to talk about? Mike knows who I want to talk about, but I'll open up the floor to you guys first. We'll go to you, Greg, first for anybody you like on the AL side.
Nobody really. Abraham Almonte maybe for $1.
He hit a game today.
Yeah. Nah, the rest of these guys.
Let's do it, Mike.
Okay, you want to just go right to your guy? Sure. So, George, why don't you tee off this exciting discussion?
So Jackie Bradley's on the DL. That's interesting because for a number of reasons. That means Brock Holt and Chris Young are probably going to play more in the outfield. The guy I want to talk about is Marco Hernandez. In an AL-only context, I am not recommending him for mixed leagues. I want to make that clear. But Hernandez is another guy who we've read all the stories about all offseason about how they've changed their swing and things are different now. And Hernandez actually did it. He started hitting more fly balls, hit a bunch of home runs in winter ball. I think he led, I want to say it was the Dominican League, in home runs, which is hard to do. Like, those are big parks that he was playing in. And he hit in spring training. He was, I think, the final cut for the Red Sox. But then the flu hit and everybody is out. Like, Ben Carsley was playing the other day. It was crazy.
He can really pick it out there.
Yeah, pretty good. He had to come in for a couple innings, but seriously, Hernandez played shortstop, which is no small thing, because in the past, when they've had a hole at shortstop, because Xander went on the bereavement, he was out on bereavement, so they needed a shortstop, and usually Brock Holt, they've just kind of thrown him in there. They didn't do that. They played Marco Hernandez. He got a couple hits, and I don't want to make it sound like Marco Hernandez is anything great, but I think in an AL only, where middle infield is an absolute wasteland, I think he can get some at bats and do something with them. And Mike and I, we've talked about, well, how long is he going to stay up? And like, the Bradley injury gives them another 10 days to keep him on the roster and see what he has. So I really kind of like Marco Hernandez. So, Mike, what do you think? Because we've talked about him a ton just in between amongst ourselves on text.
I think in AL only he's fine, and you mentioned this. He can play that Brock Holt role. Brock Holt a couple years ago when he was subbing everywhere was playing short and defensively, and this is putting it politely. Brock Holt is stretch as a shortstop.
Oh.
It's not difficult to see Hernandez, spelling Bogarts once in a while, spelling Sandoval, particularly in the later innings, and Pablo Sandoval even in shape. I don't really foresee the Red Sox throwing him out there for 162 games. Pedroia gets banged up from time to time. So really, Hernandez is a guy in AL only you could see sneaking in like two or three starts a week. And from what I've seen from him, and you kind of sold me on him, I agree. He's, again, we don't oversell him. He's an AL only like third middle infielder, but he's a guy in that format who could sneak in like $8 to $10 worth of value, assuming he sticks on the roster.
Yeah, like, there is no guarantee that Pablo Sandoval plays 160 games this year. Like, they have some legit question marks on this team. So I'd be interested in Hernandez. Let's see. Jordan Montgomery didn't get picked up because you can't pick up minor leaguers in tout, correct?
Well, he was picked. That's labor. He was
Oh,
actually picked up in tout for 45.
okay. I'll throw it to you first, Greg. Jordan Montgomery. There was actually, I think there was an article comparing him to Chris Sale a few weeks ago. It was a Plaskoff article, which made me laugh.
Oh.
But he's obviously not Chris Sale. But like, Jordan Montgomery's minor league numbers, they're kind of unimpeachable at this point, right? What he's done in AAA over like 12 to 15 starts now, over the last 2 seasons here.
Yeah, for sure. He is not Chris Sale. Yes, he is left-handed. Yes, he throws from a lower arm angle. He is not Chris Sale. Let's just stop. But I think he can, certainly in an AL only, can be a serviceable starter. It's hard to tell if he's going to hang on to that job. But yeah, SEC starter. I think he was at South Carolina, and his minor league track record, as you said, is crazy good. And I don't remember the numbers, but I think DRA backs that up as well.
Mike, in a mixed league, would you consider Montgomery?
Probably not.
Okay.
I think my main problem with Montgomery is, that park. And I also, I'm not sure how deep he's going to go into games initially. So, yeah, for me, he's AL only right now. And I would monitor him in mixed.
Also, he has options. So if he
Yeah.
Yep.
struggles, he's going back. So,
Yeah, they've got Chad Green and I think Brian Mitchell that could, that could each pitch that fifth starter role for them.
Right.
Yep. So no guarantees, but Jordan Montgomery, if you're just speculating on numbers, talent, he's a guy for me. I think in like a 16 team league, I'd give him a shot early on and see what happens, because you might have an asset. All right. That's about it for the AL side, right? I'll throw it out there one last time. We're good.
Yeah, we don't really need to talk about Matt Davidson.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm sure it's not 2013. He's on the bad side of the DH platoon with Cody Ash.
Oh my God.
This is such a sad, like, this is the sad portion of the program where people who only play mixed leagues listen and they're like, oh my God, why am I listening to this?
Well, let's spice up their lives a little bit here. If you've listened this long, you get a reward. Greg, you've been watching Yoan Moncada up close here. Tell me about how awesome he is, because I know he's good, but tell everyone what it's like to experience him.
He is very good. He was here last night in Durham for our opening day. The Charlotte Knights were here against the Bulls, and I took my son, who's three, so it was a little bit more of a child management experience than watching a baseball game. But even he knew the sound was different when Moncada hit a dinger about, I think it was the fourth inning. He hit an absolute laser over the left field wall, and it was just, he's impressive. I watched him. We got there early. I watched him warm up for a while, and he's got just a big arm. He's a big guy, nice swing from both sides of the plate. He is going to make an impact when he gets to the big leagues for sure this year.
Oh, and he can run a little bit too. So he's absolutely terrifying. Like, he's one of those guys where if he can just recognize big league spin, he's going to be like a five category monster. Like, we've made this point. Like, even if he strikes out 30% of the time, like, he's still going to be insanely valuable. Right.
Yeah, I didn't get to see him run last night because in his first at-bat, he struck out, which he's going to do.
Yeah.
And in his second at-bat, he hit a home run, and then we had to bail out not long after that. So I'm going back tomorrow. Hopefully I'll get to see him take a base or two.
Mike, Yoan Moncada, how excited should we be on a scale of 1 to 10?
I would say 9. We should be really excited about Moncada. I reserved a 10 for, you know, like Mike Trout 2.0, so I'll put it at 9.
If you find Mike Trout 2.0, please tell me you'll write an article about him.
I'll let you know. I'll be in South Jersey this weekend looking, you know, combing the high schools.
It might be Marco Hernandez. You never know. No, I'm just kidding. all right, cool. Let's get to some Twitter questions, because we did get a few, and I teased them at the start of the show. And I want to thank everybody who sent them in, because we love to do them. Let's see. Let me pull them up first. That would be helpful as my Twitter page loads. All right, let's start off with this one. It's Sean Grichdorf. He wants to know, will the Cardinals bullpen be okay? Huh. I'll throw that out to either one of you. Sung Won Oh, I mean, he's not losing that job, right?
I mean, no, he blew a save on opening night. You know, The problem with the Cardinals right now is that they're just not playing well as a unit. You know, I know they're losing tonight, and, you know, they're
Cecil's been bad.
Cecil's been bad. They're gonna be 2-6, assuming they lose tonight. So it's kind of hard to gauge a bullpen where there just haven't been save opportunities. So yeah, O should be fine. You know, Segrist had a terrible game last night, but, you know, they're also playing the Nationals, who have one of the better offenses top to bottom in the National League. So overall, I think the bullpen should be fine. There might be some shuffling in the middle with some of those roles. And, you know, it's like any other bullpen, the back end, you know, with some of the pitchers that you have, you know, floating around there, there's always, you know, like you've got Olt, you've got Sokolovic, you probably don't even want these guys in an only, but, you know, Cecil should bounce back. Segrist is okay in an only, and I think O is fine. So, you know, if you're thinking about trading O, I wouldn't. And really, the rest of that bullpen is probably best left for NL only anyway.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I wouldn't be worried about the Cardinals too much yet. This next question comes from David Theriault. He wants to know, did the league figure something out about Tim Anderson, or is it just small sample size and we won't know for a few weeks? I'll throw this one to you, Greg, because my argument would be that the league has always known about Tim Anderson because he's just aggressive at the plate. What do you make of Tim Anderson so far? Because he's hitting 192 after today, which is not great.
I think it's exactly what you said. He's just a guy who swings at everything, and he put a bunch of balls in play last year, and he's super fast, and I think he BABIPped over 350 last year, and that is why his average was palatable. But if he's doing what he's doing this year, which is still swinging at everything, and I don't think he's taken a walk yet.
No.
Then he's just going to go through spells like this. It's just who he is as a player.
His average exit velocity is also not great. So even when he has made contact, it is a lot of weak contact early on. And like, he's not a guy I'm bailing on because you're drafting him because of the speed. But if he's not getting on base at all, I'd be concerned. So, Mike, any Tim Anderson thoughts, or have we kind of nailed it?
No, I think you nailed it. And you know, I did notice when I saw this question, you know, I went and looked at the early contact rates. He is, even for him, he's striking out a lot. But you know, as someone pointed out, I think this was like for like Miguel Sano. There was someone on Twitter was kind of trying to talk about Sano had turned it around. And our own Alex Chamberlain kind of put the brakes on. He's like, you know, you're looking at like 1.5 week samples. So if Anderson's strikeout rate seems kind of high, it's just because, yeah, he's a high strikeout guy, and there's a little bit of a spike there. I wouldn't worry, but if you were expecting him to suddenly be like a better contact hitter, that just wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, I think I saw this. I think it was, full disclosure, Chris Towers, who I like a lot. We talk a lot on Twitter, so... but yeah, I think drawing any significant conclusions on batted ball data is like way too early. I think Russell Carlton wrote a lot about this last year. You guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he had it where it was about 40 batted balls before we can get any sort of reliable, like statistically significant. You throw that word out again. You're gonna hear that word a lot in the next few weeks before we have anything that you can draw any conclusions from. Just something to keep in mind. He's written a lot about that stuff, so I would advise you to check that out. All right, our last question comes from Rob Silver, a friend of the show, Rob Silver. He wants to know, Milwaukee isn't running this year. I don't know if that's meaningful or not. Any team trends that you've seen that are worth noticing? He also joked about how we should have warned him that Miguel Cabrera and Giancarlo Stanton were going to hit no home runs this year. But... anything you guys have seen that has piqued your interest so far this year?
Well, you know, the Jonathan VR's, I mean, one reason they're not running is VR's off to a poor start. And, you know, he just, this is like true of anyone's off to a poor start. He just hasn't looked good. You know, he's kind of hacking away, and, you know, he's just not, you know, performing it. And, you know, we kind of knew this with VR. Like coming in, it's not like Jonathan VR was a high average guy last year. You know, so now you look at him and he's slumping, and you know, tonight he is another 0 for 4, so he's down to 147. You know, an encouraging thing about him though is he didn't strike out tonight because he was kind of doing a lot of swinging and missing too. I think he'll bounce back, but if you're wondering why the Brewers haven't really been running, you know, when your primary guy at the top of the order isn't stealing bases, that's going to have an impact. You know, the other thing is, you know, Hernan Perez really hasn't played. I mean, he's playing tonight with the DH in Toronto, but I thought we'd see more of a straight platoon with him and Travis Shaw, but it's really difficult. He's cooled off a little bit now, but it's really difficult to justify sitting Shaw the way he was playing in the first week. So again, a lot of sample noise. I think these guys will run. I think these guys will improve. I don't see VR doing what he did last year, just because that's a really difficult season for anyone to duplicate, particularly a guy who popped up like VR. But that team will run. I wouldn't really worry too much about it. All I'd say is that, you know, VR and Perez were kind of supposed to slip this year, and you're seeing that a little bit in the first week.
Greg, anything stand out for you so far? It's fine if there isn't anything, because that's totally fair as well.
Yeah, no, I don't know that I've noticed any team trends like that, I'd just add to Mike's point that the kind of guys on the edges of the Brewers, or not on the edges of their roster, but guys who stole a decent amount of bases last year, like Broxton and even Braun and Orlando Arcia, they aren't hitting or getting on base either. Braun's getting on base, but it's kind of the same point Mike made. There's opportunities haven't been there, and I wouldn't suspect that to last necessarily. I think they'll run as soon as they get on base.
Yeah, so there's a couple things for me. Like, Nomar Mazara's obviously gotten off to a good start, but he still, I think, can't hit lefties, so that limits some of the appeal. But, you know, one of the ones I've come back to, and I've talked about this on Twitter with Ryan Bloomfield, you know, the Astros' sort of rotation, like Charlie Morton, I think, after McCullers and Keuchel, I think he's been really good. And his two starts against Seattle, obviously, it's tough to face a team twice in a row. So I think the last outing he gave up 3 earned runs in 5 innings. But like, he had faced that lineup, which is a pretty good one, like 8 times through the order, basically. So I wouldn't put much stock in the fact that he gave up some hard contact there at the end. But I've been encouraged. The velocity, even if you take into account... talking about the velocity readings is weird to me, right? Like, I'm not sure I fully understand it yet, what actually is happening with the pitch FX and the conversions and everything. Can you... who has a handle on this? Because I need you to explain to me like I'm 5. Can we talk about that for a second?
I can try. There's probably people out there who are better equipped to do it. And Greg, if you feel like you're one of those people,
no, it's been frustrating me all day, and this is my opportunity to vent about it. So I'm going to do it.
Well, so you know, there's different ways to calibrate the like where the pitch is coming from, and you know, different systems like do it a different way. So the one they're using now is going like by a point like closer to the plate where the release is coming from. So if you're, you know, if you're doing that, you know, if you're calibrating from one place as opposed to another, it's going to have an impact on, you know, where, like, the reading.
Okay.
Like I know, for example, like I think Brooks, like, I remember having this conversation with Dan Brooks once on Twitter a couple of years ago. You know, I was making this mistake too of being, oh, like, you know, and actually this didn't have to do with velocity, it had to do with like where the pitch was coming over. And he's like, oh, like my system isn't like, you know, capturing it right at the plate. It's capturing like a couple feet in front, which is why it looks a little bit different.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, like that's, you know, I wouldn't have thought of that, but like that kind of makes sense. So, you know, this is a science where there's some art involved. And I think I read somewhere today that there's, you at the moment you have to take a mile per hour off of the readings,
but not on Statcast though, right? Like,
no, not on Statcast. Right. That's right.
Exactly. Okay. There. So the reason I get on this discussion is because even if you take all that into account, Charlie Morton is still throwing really hard now. He's hitting 96 with the sinker.
Well,
so.
I made that point to somebody at my home league auction last weekend, which is, you know, I've seen Morton at 97, 96, and it's like, okay, even like 2 miles an hour off, that's still a lot better than like what he's done, and you have to take that into account. Like I think someone like Graveman, and I pointed this out in my article today, like Graveman's up about a mile and a half, but if you're not looking at the Statcast, it's a half a mile. It's like, well, that's good, but like a half mile off of 2 starts or whatever, you know, what he's got now, that's not something I'm going to look at and go, oh, wow, that's a trend. I'm looking, that's a blip, you know, let's see if it keeps up.
Yeah.
But I mean, people who don't understand this are doing that. Like, I've seen people pointing to like, you know, mile and a half an hour without knowing what you're talking about, George, with Statcast and, you know, versus someone else and saying, oh, yeah, this is a big change. And I know you, George, you're probably out there on social media, like, you know, screaming and waving your hands like, no, this isn't true.
I'm pulling my hair out. See, Greg, now Mike's frustrated about it. It's very frustrating. Would you
I'm
agree?
Not really frustrated.
It's frustrating. I don't know what to make of it. I'm no expert. Mike's explanation sounds good to me. That's my vague understanding of it as well, is that the two systems are measuring it at 2 different points, and what those points are, I do not know. But
I want to be careful too. Like, if you're listening and inclined to like post a comment on the website or under the review, that my explanation is very rough. And I want to, you know, it. There's people out there who can explain it a lot better. So, you know, please don't, you know, I'm not saying this is gospel. Like, don't take my explanation and, you know, go actually me in a comment, because I'm giving you a very sketchy version of it.
But a very accurate version. No, I'm just kidding.
It's pretty. I mean, it's pretty accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So to round out my point on Charlie Morton, he struck out 10 guys in 11 innings. The velocity gives him a chance to actually be, I think, impactful. That rotation kind of is a mess after the big two there, with McCullers pitching well. You know, his health even is kind of like a long term concern. So, Davinsky's staying in the bullpen, it looks like, for good. They're going to use him that role they like him in, the multi inning guy. So I think Charlie Morton is going to be mixed league relevant. The other one is James Paxton. He looks like an ace. Like, he looks so good. So I'm glad that we were kind of right on him, which is
nice. Yeah, I was not that high on him compared to you guys, and that's probably the guy on the front of my list that I'll say. I mean, for me, it was all about health, though.
Right.
So
yeah,
if he holds up, he looks, yeah, I've watched him. He looks terrific, and he could be – I mean, he could be a top 10 guy, but on the safe side, he could be a top 15 guy, and I wouldn't be surprised by that.
Like, he does not walk guys. He's striking out batters over batter per inning right now, basically. Yeah, James Paxton. We're not going to know for another 28 starts whether or not your point is correct, Mike, but right now, early returns, extremely encouraging on Paxton. Greg, I'll throw it out to you for the last word here. Any other interesting things so far? Or what are you watching?
Oh, well, I'm actually hitting the minor league fields tomorrow for my first kind of real games where I actually get to sit and watch games. So I'm excited for that. I think the pitching matchup in Durham is Carson Fulmer for the White Sox. And I'm not sure who the Bulls are going to throw, but their rotation is loaded. So I'm looking forward to that. That doesn't help listeners to this show a whole lot. I want to go back real quick, George. You said the Astros rotation is a mess and you forgot all about your boy Joe Musgrove.
He hasn't been that good so far. Like, he's far from a guarantee at this point.
That's true. I like him, though. He's pitching tonight, and he throws so many strikes, I think he'll be all right.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. I think he'll get an opportunity, which is fine. He's basically the anti-Tyler Glasnow, who can't throw strikes.
Oh, God, it's brutal.
It was so bad. I think I tweeted, I was like, Billy Hamilton's either going to go 0-for-4 and strike out 4 times, or he's going to get on base and steal every base, so which ended up happening. So that was cool. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and wrap up the show. And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 128 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I want to thank our returning guest. Greg's been on the show before, but Greg Wellmeyer, thanks for coming on again. Really appreciate it. It was fun to have you, and we'll do it again soon, right?
That'd be great. Anytime.
Awesome. So remember, you can subscribe to Baseball Prospectus with a 1-year premium membership. You get access to all of our content. Greg has the stash list every week. Mike has expert fab and a lot of special columns. Mike's good stuff's in the off season with the bid limits and the retrospective valuations. That's where you get your money's worth in Mike Gianella content, in my book. But his in season's good too. So I have the free agent watch, which is every Friday. I'd advise you not to read it because I recommend god awful players like Francisco Liriano, who will destroy your fantasy team. That one was so bad. It was like my worst nightmare, Greg. We were talking about this on Twitter after it happened, but like, I knew right away the first batter when he walked. I think he walked Dickerson on 4 pitches, and I was like, oh my god. I was like, this is not happening.
That's the thing, is you can see it. You can always see the Liriano blow up coming from a mile away.
Oh, Francisco, why? All right, seriously, subscribe with the Super Premium membership to get access to the Bat Signal. It's our personalized fantasy answering service. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter. Greg is at Greg Wellmeyer. Mike is at Mike Gianella, and I'm at George Bissell. For all of us, I want to say thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. We have a special guest. I'm not going to tell you who it is because we haven't 100% confirmed it yet, but we have a really cool guest coming on next week, and Mike and I are very excited about it. So we'll be back next week. Until our next show. So long, everybody.
Peace out.
Good night.